Tom, you know, the World Series game four, that must have been one of the most entertaining baseball games I've seen in years. Back and forth, and then it ends the way it ends. It looked, oh, they're going to tag him out, round and third, he falls down, then the catcher misses the ball. It was phenomenal entertainment.
Unbelievable. Again, I don't know what it is about fall baseball, but there is some kind of magic to it, and maybe it's as simple as every player on both sides actually buckling down, as opposed to the dog days of summer where, you know, a guy might half-ass it and only play at 70% and be hung over from the night before, because newsflash, that happens a lot in baseball. It's a very, very casual game. It's America's national pastime. But man, oh man, that game four was wild. And then we saw Kershaw on the bump, and he had a great game. And now all of a sudden, you know, we're on the cusp of seeing the Dodgers win the World Series. But I was, you know, flipping back and forth between that game and some other stuff. And I'm like, is this really, like, it just started to, it was one of those games where you could tell something weird was going to happen. And the story just got more and more insane. And the finish was absolutely fitting and the perfect way to cap off that game four. And here we are, you know, on the cusp of the World Series being handed out tomorrow.
Yeah, Tommy, I know we're talking about a game that happened, you know, on Saturday, but, you know, could you imagine for Will Smith and the pitcher, both guys had the opportunity, if they hadn't bobbled or whatever, misfired, they would have gotten out and the game might have ended a different way. But could you imagine if yesterday the Rays had won that game and they knew that they had Kershaw already played and they got to roll out two other pitchers? I mean, those two guys, and I hope the Dodgers do win it, but those two guys, they wouldn't sleep for a year. You'd be so rattled that, you know, you, one of the two of you, were responsible for a play that is actually, you know, quote unquote, quite routine.
You're right, Strutty, and it is quite routine generally, but the amount of pressure, I know, you know, the ballpark isn't packed or anything, but there's still a lot of fans and millions of people watching, and this is for all the marbles. And even for the tag out with the runner falling, who was it, Rosarena, who's having a monster playoffs, you know, stumbling, getting up, getting caught. And I think Will Smith, like, just it's like a receiver that's already looking to the end zone without catching the ball just yet, and it slips out of his hands. And it was the same play with Will Smith. It's just unbelievable. And yeah, routine is fair to say on most nights, but in game four of the World Series, I thought he had it, and I'm like, oh, here we go, runners out at the plate. And then you saw the ump jump out of the way because he was even looking at the runner, and all of a sudden he's trying to duck the ball that's going through his legs, and bada bing, bada boom, the Rays have life. It was just crazy. And I mean, I'm glad I stuck with that game. I think many others probably feel the same way.
Tom Cazzola joins us on Empty Sports Leader TSN 1260. And Tommy, I don't know about you, back when you were playing for the Red Wings, if you got upset and you were looking to get traded to the Warriors or, you know, any of the other teams, if you pulled a Carlos Dunlap, I don't know if you guys saw this or not, but he's the Bengals' longest tenured player. He went online afterwards. He's saying his house is up for sale. He's on the sidelines getting into it with his coaches. Like, he's basically pulling a George Costanza right now, doing everything in his power to get either traded or released by the Bengals.
Yeah, too bad he doesn't. Maybe he's got a Vince Lombardi trophy somewhere around his house that he could drag around the parking lot of the Bengals stadium. That'd be amazing. or put on an old vintage Boomer Esiason jersey from the Bengals Hall of Fame and stretch it out and get his germs all over it the way Costanza did with, what, a Babe Ruth, or was it a Lou Gehrig uniform from back in the day? But, yeah, this Dansby story is just, or Dunlap story is just wild. I mean, you're posting stuff, you know, the depth chart from the locker room. You put your house up for sale and you Instagram it and you say you're done. It's just wild. Like, and that at the same time, it doesn't it drive down your trade value? I mean, nobody's going to want you if they know, or, you know, they're not going to be willing to pay, probably market value for you if everybody knows how discontent and pissed off you are with your team and they know that they can get you for dirt cheap, especially with the trade deadline looming in the NFL. So, an ugly situation, but he's a guy that's been around for over a decade, guys. And at some point, you know, you want to feel respected, and you feel like you've earned that respect being around for that long. And clearly, Dunlap doesn't feel like he's getting the respect he thinks he deserves. So, he's throwing like a hissy fit on the sidelines with the defensive coordinator too. It's just getting really ugly to the point where it's becoming a distraction for the Bengals.
Well, his own teammates are saying enough's enough publicly, yeah. So that's when you know it's become a distraction. Now, David Braley, a true champion of the CFL, owned two teams, was on the Board of Governors for a long time. Like, there's a lot of questions about next season in the CFL, Tom, and I know Dave Naylor had an article about it today. There's a lot of uncertainty, but, you know, I know that Farhan Lalji reported there's lots of people in Vancouver who want to, you know, purchase the Lions, and so I wonder if, you know, if this automatically gets done, or do they wait and see if there's a season? I'm kind of curious about what happens now to the ownership of the BC Lions.
Yeah, sad day for the Lions and truly for the CFL. I mean, Braley did everything he could and then some to keep a couple of teams afloat. Guys, he owned the Argos and the Lions at the same time, and so condolences to his family and a true champion of the league. I know he was an old school thinker too, and not necessarily in line with some of the newer owners in the CFL, but a sad day nonetheless for the league and notably the BC Lions. In terms of going forward, you guys, yeah, Naylor had a good article. There's so many question marks. The league itself has been really quiet. I know it's a time where we don't have a ton of answers, but at some point, I would assume we would need to get some sort of framework or understanding of how the CFL wants to proceed in 2021. I don't know how you mothball another full season and expect to come out okay at the other end. I know a lot can change from now until the potential start of training camps and rookie camps and whatever off-season activities teams want to put on. But, man, oh, man, it's almost too silent to the point where it's eerie for the CFL. That's just my take on it, you guys. But I want to see this league succeed, first of all. I want to see it play, succeed, grow, and hopefully, you know, whoever buys the BC Lions obviously will want to share that mentality. And I know the league's going to have to figure out a way to balance the books and do a better job of building a platform for its entire collection of teams to actually make money and succeed and not have to prop each other up like the Eskimos had to do for, I think, the Alouettes this past season. Guys, a little bit of information here and there from the league would be wonderful. I don't know, Greg's, where you stand on this. I know, Stretty, you follow along too, but I have heard absolutely nothing.
Well, I mean, what are they going to say? You know, like I sometimes to me, unless you've got something to say, there's no really info. Like they need a solution, and you know, you look at some of the way that the cases are going right now. It doesn't seem like anywhere is going the right direction in North America. You know, our players going to be able to cross the border to come and play, or our fans going to be able to go to the game, and it feels like without fans, you know, how are they going to run a league? So I'm actually very concerned about the CFL. I enjoy watching it. I love attending as a fan. But I just don't know what they don't have the financial backdrop that some of these other leagues do. And even the NHL is maybe, you know, scratching their head about how they're going to make this work. So Tom, I don't know what they can say. Like they need help. I think that more than any other professional league, they need a lot of help to make this work.
Stretty, I agree that they need help, but I think the concept of these teams not having a ton of money, because I think that's a little bit old school thinking and not necessarily completely the case these days, because you look at the collection of owners, the private owners in the league, these guys have deep, deep pockets. And I don't know, you know, what the budget and operating costs are right now. And I know a chunk of the teams are publicly owned as well. And I think those are the ones that generally we'll find a way to survive and have an easier way to survive overall. But it's not like these guys, you know, you got new ownership in Montreal. Ottawa seems to be healthy. Saskatchewan's healthy. Winnipeg healthy. Calgary healthy. BC is a question mark. Montreal, again, I'll reemphasize, has been a problem spot. Toronto has been a problem spot. Hamilton has Bob Young overseeing things, and he's got deep pockets. Like, I think just if we heard that at least we get an update somewhere from the league saying, hey, by the way, I know it's been quiet, it's been dark, the lights have been generally off for us, but we are putting in place a few plans. We've got a plan A, we've got a plan B, a plan C, plan D, plan E. As long as they're getting that info out there saying we are thinking through a ton of scenarios and trying to build frameworks for each individual one and adjust as best as possible, just to have that food for thought for the fan bases and people who follow the league in general, I think that would be a good start at least.
Tom Gazzola joins us on Edmonton Sports Leader TSN 1260. Tommy, looking at the Oilers cap situation, quickly, Ethan Bear, Willie Lagesson, both guys who have qualifying offers. And I don't think they'll accept it. Well, definitely Ethan Bear. He'll probably want a little bit of a raise. But when you look at their numbers and how much money they have left and the potential for Oscar Klefbom, whenever the season's officially announced, it's restarting. Do you think Ken Holland brings in another player? We assume that Bear and Lagesson get signed, and I'm assuming that Ethan Bear is probably only signing a one-year deal at around 1.2, 1.4-ish, given around that money. Do you think they bring in someone else, or does Ken Holland just wait to see how the season goes so he has more room to potentially add at the deadline?
Could we be seeing a season whenever training camps get going, Gregs, where we see a ton more of PTOs? It seems to be a recurring theme and more prevalent year after year. So, yeah, I could see if guys aren't signed, some PTOs being thrown out there and a few of those guys in camp with the Oilers. And then you give them a tryout, you pay their per diem, and then if they find a way to force you to keep them, then you give them a contract and you find a way to squeeze them in. And we'll see if and when they finally put Klefbom's deal on LTIR and how much relief that gives them. But, yeah, I could see a bunch of PTOs happening, like, right across the board in the National Hockey League.
Well, 100%. You look at some of the people that are still out there. I mean, like, you know, Carl Soderberg, Anthony Seau, Sammy Vatanen, Duclair. I mean, some of those guys will get signed. Even Connor Sheary. You know, there's going to be guys, and the further this goes, the less money those guys are likely to get. You know, it's not like they're sitting back saying, I'm juggling, you know, five or six offers. For some of them, it just might be, this is the offer. You know, like, this is what they're at, and they're hoping it gets better. But, you know, I don't know, guys. I think you just nailed it. And there'll be an opportunity to bring that in and to have, you know, guys that maybe slip in on underneath the big guy, Klefbom's deal.
Yeah. I mean, Hoffman was he was one of the chips that was waiting to fall after the Taylor Hall deal, and he's still out there.
He'll get signed. He'll get signed. I'm
yeah.
Not too worried about.
How about Duclair? I know we've kind of hit on Duclair a few times, but man, if there was a contract that was out there at the start of free agency, I think I threw it out there, like, take it and get whatever money you can. And then, you know, you got a year to prove yourself once again, even though you had a pretty solid year the year before. And this is without him having an agent anymore. Remember, we were talking about that.
Yeah, so we'll see. Tommy, have yourself a great day. We'll chat with you tomorrow.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you tomorrow.